This is a production of Cornell University.
We're going to go ahead and get started. Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the University Assembly to order. This is a special meeting. It's also our last meeting of the academic calendar. It's 4:30 p.m. on the 12th of May, 2020. Can we call the roll first, please?
Yes. Joseph Anderson?
Here.
Andy Barrantes-Gomez?
I'm here.
Christopher Barth?
Hello.
Richard Bensel? Uche
Richard is here.
Richard is here, okay. Uche Chukwukere?
Here.
Cody Duell?
I'm here.
Brandon Fortenberry? David Heiner?
David might be a few minutes late. He is dealing with some rogue bees in his hive, but he is going to try to make it.
All right, I'll keep an eye out for that. Alex Hong?
Here.
Robert Howarth?
Here.
Adam Howell?
Here.
Logan Kenny?
Present.
Carolyn Levine?
Here.
Gavin Martin?
Here.
Ranel Mensah?
Here.
Deborah Niakaru?
Here.
Jeff P?
Here.
Pilar Thompson?
Here.
And Charles Van Loan?
Here.
Okay, thank you for that. We have a quorum.
I just realized I said here to my muted thing.
So we saw you were there. Welcome.
Yep, I got you down.
Are there any calls for late additions to the agenda? If so, you should raise your hand.
Yes.
I think Richard, yes.
Okay.
The agenda that was circulated is in violation of our bylaws.
Is that?
And therefore, there can't be additions to it. It doesn't, in procedural terms, it doesn't exist.
Are you raising it a point of order, or are you adding something late to the agenda?
That is a point of order.
Okay.
I circulated the section of the bylaws. Let me read it. The executive vice chair must make the agenda of the assembly available to members no less than 24 hours prior to a meeting of the assembly. The agenda was circulated this morning. 24 hours have not elapsed. That provision of the bylaws has not been satisfied. It cannot come before the university assembly, and therefore there can be no late additions to something that does not exist.
Okay, thank you for your point of order. In light of Richard's issue, I suggest we take a vote of the assembly to approve the agenda as it was sent out earlier today by Pilar.
Such a vote is illegal?
No, it is not, Richard. It is not.
It is. What you can do, Bob, overrule my point of order. My point of order is still outstanding. You can't move and you can overrule it, but you cannot dismiss it.
I'm calling for a vote that we proceed with the agenda as put out.
Bob,
Richard, you're out of order. Richard, you're out of order.
Point of order. Are you, Richard, the point of order has to be satisfied before you can move on. Read Robert's rules. I sent them out. You must rule on the point of order.
I'm suggesting we proceed in a common sense way by taking the majority viewpoint of the assembly, which is within the prerogative of the chair under Robert's rules of order.
It is not. A point of order, read the rules. I sent them out. A point,
Richard,
of order must be ruled by the chair. Once you have ruled, then we can.
You're raising a technicality because we've
got. This is not a technicality. This is very important, and it doesn't. You're delaying things, Bob. We have rules. We've adopted them. They're Robert's rules. They're there. I sent them out. All you have to do is rule.
All those in favor of accepting the agenda as it was signed earlier today, please raise your hand.
You cannot do that.
Officer Semele, could you please
on the point of order?
Could you please mute Richard? He's out of order.
No, I'm not out of order. You must
as chair, Richard. You're out of order.
You cannot look, Bob. This you cannot do that. You are. The point
I'm doing
of
my
order,
best as chair in the difficult circumstances.
It's pure and simple. It's not a. This isn't ambiguous. It's a point of order under our bylaws. So if you want to say,
I think your point, if I have it correctly, and I understand it, is that the bylaws say that the agenda should be sent out 24 hours in advance. They were sent out late. That's your point of order.
No, that is not my point of order.
That's
my
how
point
I
of order is under Robert's rules. If the agenda is not sent out in advance in accordance with the rules of the assembly that is meeting, then it is not on the table. Now, what you can do,
let me suggest, Bob.
What I can suggest to you.
Richard, you're out of order.
I am not out. I can't.
You're out of order as chair.
A point of order cannot be out of order, Bob.
Yes, you can.
It just can't.
Read your Robert's Rules of Order.
I have. I sent them out. You must rule on the.
Richard, we can't both chair this meeting.
No,
I am the chair. You are not the chair.
Excuse me. Logan does have her hand up, so I recommend we hear a second opinion. Logan has her hand up.
It's easy to do to get to a second opinion. Rule, but
Richard, do you allow Logan to speak, please?
Look, you can't mute me, whoever is doing that. You
Logan? Know,
I'm just going to say, in ease of trying to move the meeting along, I think that either A, we should consult right now with that particular provision in Robert's rules, if Gina might have it open, and rule adequately on what Robert's rule says, as that's what is within our bylaws. So whatever
our procedure under the terms of the university assembly at the first meeting of the year, I appointed Pilar as our parliamentarian to interpret the rules as we go. So we will do that as opposed to looking things up, given that we would prefer, I assume, to get to the real business of the meeting. Pilar, may I ask you, do you think it would be acceptable for us to take a vote to approve the agenda as it was sent out and proceed?
In order to make sure, given the discontent and the various, let's say, opinions that we currently have, I would prefer to have the Office of Assemblies give us unbiased and general ruling. Gina, would you be able to speak, please?
I'm looking it up right now. I actually have my copy, so do it right now.
This way, Bob, I just feel it makes it easier for the whole of the group to be able to facilitate a smoother and proactive discussion for us to finalize our last meeting in a positive and unbiased way.
While we're waiting for a ruling here, under the general heading of making deadlines, I don't think any of us, I think all of us have violated deadlines. And you know, we cut each other slack. Why don't we just get on with the business, right? I mean, this is not the time to be fussy about this kind of thing. I don't see it as a major issue.
I agree with that. That would be my preference. I'm assuming it's what most people would like, but.
I'd like to be heard on that. the problem with two problems. One is we've had a lot of surprises. We had this essay draft as a surprise. We had the content of the essay draft as a surprise when we looked at it.
Richard,
we had the message from the president
Richard,
from
Paul. We're not discussing your point of order.
No,
is not that, open
I'm
for
leading up to it. What
it's,
this?
It's not open
what
for
they,
discussion.
What they? What the illegitimate, illegal agenda does is take the CJ draft off the table.
The CJ draft was not on the table.
It was certainly on the table. It is.
If we get to that. It is not.
It is.
I would recommend we pause the discussion until we hear from Gina in order to not escalate.
Thank you.
If we can have a bit of patience, Richard. I see Adam Howell with his hand up.
Adam?
Yeah, Gina, if you're, I'm looking too. I think I've got the relevant section of my copy if you want me to read it.
Go ahead.
This will help.
We can concur.
Just when a point of order is at page 255 of the 11th edition, when a point of order is submitted to a vote of the assembly and the point relates to stopping something from being done, it is usually best to put the question so that an affirmative vote will be in favor of allowing the proceedings to continue as if the point had not been raised. Basically, I think both of you are getting at the same thing. Richard, you're saying he can vote to, there can be a motion to overrule the point, or you can vote to proceed. It's essentially saying the same thing. We just vote to proceed as if the point had not been raised.
Which was what I was trying to suggest as chair.
I think that's exactly right. The point is to do it in a procedurally correct way. The point of order, when it's overruled, then it can be appealed, and then there's a vote of the assembly.
Yeah.
On the appeal, it is possible to debate the merits of the point of order, which is what I would like to do, because I do think this, unlike Charlie, I do think this is a very important decision.
Yeah, essentially what I'm saying is I think you both are basically going for the exact same thing, it sounds like, so.
I would like to put it to a vote and proceed with the actual business of the meeting.
If I can clarify too, to the matter of an appeal, it's, as I read it, it's actually at the discretion of the chair to either hear the appeal or not.
That's my understanding based on my rereading of Robert's rules yesterday, yes. So all those in favor of accepting the agenda as it was sent out earlier by Pilar, please raise your hand. Online, if you could, please. And I can't see that. Pilar or Gina, are you counting? All those opposed? I should have done yes, shouldn't I? Okay.
Yeah. If we can do a yes as well, it makes it easier to count. Thank you, everyone.
Yes,
there we go.
You.
If everything is complete.
And if you are opposed, check no, please.
We have 14 yes, 2 opposed.
Okay, we will proceed with the agenda as Pilar sent it out. And I've heard no additions, delayed additions, we will proceed. So I would like to ask for approval of the minutes from the April 28th meeting. Are there any issues with that? Hearing none, can I have a motion to accept?
I actually have my hand raised, Bob.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
No, it's okay. It's my understanding that they were sent out today and I hadn't had a chance to read, so I'd like to make a motion to table, if possible.
I hear you. On the other hand, this is our last meeting. So
since we are still the body until the next elected one, I think that we could potentially make a motion to have any additions sent out to Pilar and Gina after this meeting and then have an acceptance over email, but I don't feel comfortable approving minutes.
I'm okay with that. Would people like to proceed that way?
If somebody could second my motion.
Second.
Second.
Okay, we will proceed with doing so. I don't think that requires a vote. Thank you for raising that. And sorry, I missed your hand. If you could drop your objects there, yeah, that makes it easier for me to see what's up. I'm colorblind, so that they all look the same to me, with apologies. That takes us to the next item of business, resolution four, the campus circulator resolution that Chris has kindly and patiently put forward. So I think we could take this to a quick vote, Chris, unless you want to make a presentation again. And basically you've presented it. So why don't you spend a minute or two just reminding us and we'll put it to a vote.
Sure. Hello, everybody. So the campus circulator is imagining, it's taking the 11-year-old proposal in the campus master plan from 2008 and kind of taking a look at all the areas since 2008 that it looks like this kind of transportation system would help out all of Cornellians and their life. The biggest updates are that the employee assembly did pass the version that we are voting on today that has the amended language in the abstract and in the be it there or resolve clause, which specifically mentions the COVID-19 pandemic and that this is a general priority for the university. And once we're kind of clear of the pandemic, this should be something that the university considers. The employee assembly voted 25 in favor, one not in favor and zero abstentions. And I'm also happy to report that the GPSA also voted for the resolution and it was 34, one against and 11 abstains. And a funny thing about using the rules was once Andy sent that to me, the GPSA president, he just sent me the numbers and I was like, well, does that mean it passed? Because like, you don't say it passed. So like, what are your rules about what has to pass? And he's like, that's a good question. So we looked it all up and it turned out, and if I get this wrong, Andy, you can slap me on the internet, that abstained votes do kind of count towards the four total. So in that way that it was passed in the GPSA. So that is the update. Now we have successfully passed it in the student assembly. You guys were first, you did a great job. I love you. The GPSA passed the same original version that the students did. The employee assembly passed the amended one with the COVID language. And then today here in the university assembly, we are now about to vote on the amended one with that language. So thank you to everybody.
Thank you for that, Chris. Any brief discussion or comments, or can we take it right to a vote? We've discussed it before.
Motion to vote.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor, check yes, please. Opposed, should check no.
16 in favor.
And opposed?
None listed.
And if you want to abstain, why don't you raise your hand? Okay, the motion carries. Good job, Chris.
Good job, all of the assemblies. This was the all assembly coordination. Thank you, everybody.
The next item is new resolution 8, which is a resolution prepared by the executive board after the communication we received from President Pollack in the last several days. And Uche, can you introduce this, please?
Yes. Motion to bring this to the floor.
Yes.
Second.
Okay, the motion, the resolution has been presented to you via the website and via our email, and it's been moved and seconded. So discussion. Thank you, Usha.
So yes, hi everyone. Thank you for having me here today. So resolution 8 really is just serves two parts. One, to thank all of the CJC members from the 2019-2020 academic year, Mariah Dege, Richard Bensel, myself, Brian Corrigan, Alex Hong, Catherine Huang, Risa Lieberwitz, Gavin Martin, Jen Michael, Laura Taylor, and Andrea Vajos, and also thanking Barbara Krause, Christina Liang, thanking Gabrielle Cantor as the current JCC, and also thanking Liel and Annalie for, being the spearheaders of the essay draft of the campus code. So Resolution 8, or UA Resolution 8, serves a couple of purposes. So one, as we all saw Martha put out in that message, that she is already planning on rejecting the CJC version of the draft of the Code of Conduct. And especially seeing as she's going to be rejecting the version, and we are currently facing the possibility of losing jurisdiction over changes to the code, passing Resolution 8 gives us an opportunity to still have an opportunity to shape the code through the UA. We've been working on the code for the past 32, 33 months, and it hasn't really been, not much has come from it. And we really want to make sure, I really think that we should be passing this resolution, because I think that, you know, in the future, I would like for the, you know, for in the future, being able to have the code being shaped by the UA is something that I think a lot of people would like. For another reason, I think passing Resolution 8 is important because it supports the request for extended public comment, which many have expressed was not given enough time. And seeing as we only had 80 comments, and the majority of them came from alumni and professional students, passing Resolution 8 just gives more support for the fact that we're going to need more time to give more public comment. We're going to need more time to get more opinions from undergraduates that make up the majority of the respondents through the code, and we did not see a lot of comment from them. So passing this gives support for more time for public comment. The third thing that I really wanted to address was the fact that the Office of the Student Advocate and the Student Assembly, that version of the Code of Conduct received a lot of organizational support from some of the largest identity-based organizations on campus. So we're talking about Black Students United, La Asociación Latina, the South Asian Council, Native American Indigenous Students at Cornell, Haven, the LGBTQ plus Student Union, ALANA, the Multicultural Greek and Fraternal Council, the Black Women's Support Network, the Men of Color Council, the Bengali Students Association, and many more. And I think it's really important that we bring up the fact that the code was established back in 1971 as a result of the Willard Strait Hall takeover that was pushed for by Black students. And I think, you know, another point that I really wanted to mention is, you know, I've been hearing a lot of discussion for the CJC draft of the code and citing how, you know, it helps, or that version of the code is more in support for marginalized communities, POC communities. But what we've been finding is that there has been no actual reaching out to some of these communities and actually getting some of their opinions on the CJC draft of the Code of Conduct, especially because when we were reaching out to get support, many of them had, you know, recognized the fact that none of them had ever been consulted or talked to during this process for the Code of Conduct. So I think it's really important that we start actually listening to students rather than speaking for them, and stop speaking for communities that we don't actually belong to. And I think that the OSA version of the Code of Conduct has, you know, put in a lot more time to make sure that we're actually reaching out to communities that will be the most affected by proposals and changes to the code. And I think lastly, you know, the fact that, you know, undergraduates, which make up 96% of the respondents, we understand undergraduate student culture the best. And I think over the past few weeks, we have been realizing that we haven't been having much of a voice in, you know, shaping this code. And I think that it's really important that, you know, we recognize the fact that the code is very out of touch in many ways. And undergraduate students have not been having as much input as they need. And so I think overall passing Resolution 8 is, you know, gives a very well-rounded way of bringing all these parts together. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Isha. That's a very compelling argument, I believe. Andy.
Hi, thank you. Hi, thank you so much for the resolution. I'm not really asking a question. I'm just pointing a point of concern with the fact that graduate students, you mentioned some professional students were asked for their input, but as far as I know, the SA version never went through the GPSA assembly, which to me is a bit concerning because that's where you can tackle a lot of the constituent groups that are representing a lot of other groups. Again, not really a question, just a point of concern. If I were to vote on this, I would vote with reservation. But yeah, or maybe you can speak to that. Maybe there were other groups that are in the groups that you mentioned, some graduate students in the groups that you mentioned that you were able to tap into. Maybe that's a point of clarification that you can add to. Thank you.
Uche, do you want to respond to that or?
I think another thing that I would love, you know, and I see what you're saying there, but I think that there are other ways of gauging graduate student support rather than just going through the GPSA. And I think that the SA and the OSA that we've done, like our due process and just, we're not due process, but, you know, done due diligence and making sure that we're reaching out to as many, you know, undergraduate student organizations, especially because that's like our main jurisdiction, and really figuring out what their thoughts and feelings and proposals for the draft of the code is. Although I do understand the point of including graduate students because it is important, I do think that, you know, our main jurisdiction and where it is for undergraduates, and that was our main focus in making sure that we're getting support.
Logan?
Thank you. I'm gonna quickly pull up some notes. Thank you for drafting the resolution. Unfortunately, most of my comments are going to be in opposition, as I think you all would expect. My big problem is that this resolution is giving the administration a blank check to do whatever they please with the code without absolutely any sort of accountability whatsoever. They can choose to adopt one sentence from the CJC draft if they choose. They can ignore the public comment we've already collected from the CJC or voices from the forum. If we do what the administration wants, which is a deviation from all that shared governance stands for, we are not only letting the Cornell community down, but we're also saying goodbye to due process. So it's kind of the complete opposite of the Willard Strait Hall takeover. It's also contradictory to earlier resolutions that we've passed. We passed a resolution last semester affirming the CJC's jurisdiction over the code, and now we're voting something completely opposite. And with that, there are members of the Student Assembly that are on the CJC, and I feel that they were. I don't know their experiences outside of when I left chairhood, but each constituent group, to my understanding, was adequately represented. This is also coming out of a email from the president in which she is mildly threatening authority over our code and misquoting federal regulation, which doesn't say that we need a uniform standard. And in my opinion, if the president would like to take away the draft, I would much prefer for her to take it away from us and have the backlash than for us to get rid of whatever jurisdiction we have over the code. And lastly, I don't believe that the OSA draft reflects the comments that we've received from undergraduate students. I think that the first time that, based on the Sun article, individuals received the resolution a couple of hours before the meeting and spent about 5 to 10 minutes maybe discussing it. So the essay on the floor didn't spend a lot of time looking into this. I checked the OSA's Facebook page and they never mentioned their own code, let alone ask for an opinion on it. So I just want to know where the proof is that the OSA is representing the actual opinions across the campus outside of those groups, because I talked to the Cornell Undergrad Veterans Association and they were unaware of this, and that's a rather big group as well. Our public comment and CJC forum responses are in opposition to what the OSA says. And as Leal Sterling stated, the University Council draft is what was initially worked on. And so I don't know where they got that document, why they didn't reach out to the CJC. And at the end of the day, I think that to write a blank check to the administration with absolutely no accountability for the University Assembly to work through these changes when we just got those 2 weeks of public comment through the CJC. So through our charter, the UA is then supposed to deliberate. And then we're supposed to leave open a 1 month period for public comment. And then we're supposed to vote our recommendation through to the president. That the president is telling us false information about a federal regulation as a means to tell us that she won't accept our code, in my opinion, doesn't matter that much, because I would prefer for her to go to the Board of Trustees or use her own power to take away this process in the middle of a pandemic than for us to freely hand it over and not ensure that our students are heard. And I think that, to go off of Uche's point, we can have a further public comment period, that 1 month period. And if the university assembly agrees to have the student advocate draft up there as well, that can be up there and it can be a big public comment period, but to give it away to the administration without any sort of accountability, either through the UA or any other source, is a huge mistake.
Uche, you might want to respond, but let me just say that my reading of the charter disagrees with your interpretation, Logan. Uche?
Yeah, so actually, am I able to defer? I have another, defer my comments to Gavin Martin. I think that he can also speak on this point as well.
Sure, I'm going to go through the members in the order they put their hands up, though. So Gavin's okay. There, but down a little bit.
I think a couple things, and then I think, definitely when Gavin gets his point to chance to speak, he can speak on this more. A few things. I think one, I'm a little bit confused on how you feel that, invoking or talking about the Wilbur Strait Hall takeover is contradictory to this argument right now. I think overall, the point that I've been, really trying to make is the fact that, undergraduates, organizational support, you're talking about the public comments that you got from undergrads, but I think there were about 12 of those comments, but rather we went through really large student organizations that put on for most of the identity-based organizations that we have here on campus. And I think that the fact that we've only had 12 comments or 12 public comments from undergraduates really speaks to the fact that, there was not a good job in actually trying to reach out to a lot of these different student organizations. Just having one place, one link, that's set out there, sending out one email is not enough to be able to gather and garner the thoughts and opinions and support from the students that are actually affected by this. So I think the fact that, we do have a few comments from, undergrads, but that's not representative enough. We needed more, and we recognize that in the OSA, the SA, we worked very hard to get to these affinity groups and making sure that they understand the changes that are happening and that they're very well informed on, how things are going to change, how their rights are going to change, making sure that they're really involved. And, I think the fact that, all of the assemblies, the purpose of all the shared governance, the assemblies, is to really make sure that we are voicing the opinions of Cornell community members, undergraduate students, the student assembly. I see it mainly motions to voice the opinions and thoughts and concerns of undergraduate students, not really how we feel as assembly members. So what we did is what the OAC did, what the SA did, I think is something that just hasn't been done enough, and making sure that we're reaching out to a lot of these affinity groups and getting their thoughts and opinions on this. I think
that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Richard.
Could I quickly respond, Bob?
You may.
Thank you. Yeah, so I just wanted to say I meant more along the lines to say in the shared governance process that I just believe that giving away the university assembly's authority over the code, whether that means both the CJC draft as well as the OSA draft to be given into the hands of administration, is what is the deviation from shared governance. And when I talked about the Willard Strait Hall takeover, it's because I feel like we are almost kneeling down to the administration right now with this resolution to just give them the power to do whatever they would like at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, the OSA draft, regardless of, I understand that you got a lot of input. Unfortunately, the groups, the government groups and the Cornell veterans were not involved in that input, which I wish they would have been, but I understand that you got input. I'm just saying that there's time to get more input before just throwing this away to the administration, and that this could be a more collaborative effort. And that is what due process is, and that's what shared governance has always been. It hasn't been giving away to the administration, especially when the OSA's draft is very similar to the administration's draft. So it's very clear which one is going to be accepted and pushed forward, and it's a bit biased. And I'm afraid of seeing a biased process and seeing other students. And I know that there weren't as many comments on the public.
Logan, I'm going to cut you off there. You asked for a very brief reply.
Okay, I'm just going to say that there are a lot of comments on Reddit and Facebook that I would highly recommend that the student assembly look into.
Okay, thank you. Richard.
Yeah. Logan said very eloquently a lot of what I would say. I would emphasize that the SA draft is, in fact, I don't know, some percentage, 90%, something like that, the University Council's draft. And that if in the resolution, resolution 8, it basically is sending back the University Council's draft to themselves. I will move, that as an amendment in the substitute, that the CJC draft be accepted. So that's I would move that. It will need a second.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
With the second, the CJC draft is now as available to comment and discussion deliberations, and we should be comparing the two drafts. Logan's pointed out some of the-
if I just might interrupt, my understanding of Robert's rules is that we will discuss your motion now. So the discussion is whether to substitute the CJC.
That is not true.
Richard, only one of us can chair the meeting. I'm sorry.
We can discuss it. That's fine with me. But if we want to focus all of our discussion on the CJC draft, that is fine.
That's the effect of your motion until we vote on it.
Excuse me?
That is the effect of your motion, which has been seconded, until we vote it up or down.
No. Amendments in the nature of a substitute, Bob, are perfected, each of them, before they are matched up with one another. That the reason for that in Robert's rules is that amendments should be considered, perfecting amendments to each alternative before they're presented.
This is not a big thing for me. If we discuss the CJC draft and we have amendments to it and so forth and so on, and people want to offer them. If you want to put it on the floor, then there cannot be amendments to the resolution in the meantime, if that's your ruling. And we will just discuss the CJC draft until we're ready to decide.
That would be my understanding. Oh, Adam?
Can I point of order? Since we're trying this out, to me, the resolution 8 that was introduced was on the floor and that was under debate. So, and I don't have this right because I don't do this as well as everybody else, but with Richard, what you're proposing in that motion is sort of now to bring two different things onto the floor at the same time. And I at least know that I don't think that that can happen. So if anybody wants to fix that.
My interpretation, and bear with me if I have it wrong, but I'm not trying to be controlling or anything, so I'm trying to move this on, is that with the motion to essentially accept the CJC, that is a substitution, and therefore we debate that and vote on it before we move back to resolution 8.
Just to be clear, because Chris is right. I mean, we should be crystal clear in everything we do today. An amendment in the form of a substitute
takes the draft of the CJC draft, and basically substitutes it for the entirety of the resolution. So we do have two different drafts in debate, but they do come to a head. They are finally compared one to the other. And the reason why in Robert's rules, you allow amendments and discussion on both at the same time is that they should be, when they come, the assembly should be able to perfect them in whatever way they believe best before they are matched. That's the only reason. I'm not, but that explains the parliamentary thing. I'm not going to press the question of whether, if no one wants to talk about the assembly resolution, as we talk about the CJC draft, that's fine with me.
Adam.
Okay, so first of all, I apologize, everybody. You might hear a bunch of kid noise and Lego movies in the background and whatnot. So I apologize for that at the outset. I will be brief. First of all, I want to commend the hard work and passion that everybody brings to this from all sides on a very important issue. I, for myself, plan on voting against the original resolution. The resolution not as amended by Richard, but the original version, and it really does not, in my opinion, lie anything more with what is contained in any particular version, other than to say that I don't feel that the process and the expectation of a certain process that was laid out before the UA at the beginning of the year has been that expectation has not been respected and carried through to its to the conclusion that was expected by the people that the different assemblies sent to populate the CJC. As chair of the EA, it's very difficult for me to our members on the CJC put in a lot of hard work under the expectation that their work would be given primacy in terms of its evaluation by the president and others. And to have that process changed at the 11th hour is a bit disturbing to me. I don't know how I go to my members again and ask them to participate in something with a certain set of expectations and put in a lot of work and see that upended later on in the day. So, I think Andy makes a very good point. Again, from a similar perspective, it feels like. I think that, there is precedent, and really, it comes from my experience, my positive experience working on divestment resolutions, in that the Board of Trustees laid down a very specific process that all of the assemblies respected, and there were other groups that had differing ideas. But the board at the end of the day, or the president at the end of the day, did not take those other ideas and give them equal representation in what was presented to the Board of Trustees. So that's really just the simple point of view that I have. Again, I have nothing but respect for everybody, including the students who have brought forth their proposal. But for myself right now, I'm definitely a no vote on the original version. So thank you again. I'm looking forward to the rest of the debate, but it's just a simple comment on my part. So.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
And can I just make a comment? I think that overall,
point of order. I wasn't asking a question or of anybody. Shouldn't the speakers list be in order?
I'm sorry, you two. I will stick to the speaker. And for those of you who are not members, I am giving preference totally to UA members today. Gavin.
So thank you very much. I want to address.
Can you turn up the volume a little?
Is this better? I can speak.
That's better.
Up.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
No, it's good.
So I first want to address Logan's comments, and then I can get to a few of your comments as well, Adam.
I think to preface, there is an issue invoking the Willard Strait Hall takeover for any individual who is non-Black. And I think that this is important to reference, especially in the Sun articles that are coming out. Black labor, Black energies, and Black lives were on the line in the Willard Strait Hall takeover. And that also means that the legacy is brought to Black students here on campus, although that also means the assemblies. So I think this is something important to keep in mind. Going from that, I would also like to reiterate that the Office of Student Advocate is an advocate for students on campus, and they do a lot of work. They have seen issues within the JCCs, they've seen issues around campus, and have an exogenous perspective that not many other groups have on campus. So we're very thankful for them as undergraduates, and we're very thankful for the draft that they brought. The next part is that the essay side, there's some rhetoric going around that the essays didn't have enough time to review the draft, or the essays didn't have enough time to review the resolution or ask questions. Just like every other assembly, our resolutions are sent out, our agendas are sent out 24 hours in advance. Everyone is also given documents of the resolutions, and there was adequate time to discuss it. This was either because our members did not read it and they were ill-informed as individuals, or it is because the topics at hand, were agreed upon by the group. And I really believe it was the latter, not the former. I also think that there is something to be said about having input from other groups on campus. It's important to remember that the Cornell Veterans Group does have a seat on the student assembly, but also just discussing other groups, the undergraduates, we have to remember everyone here is a part, or for the largest part, everyone here is a part of representative democracy, right? So I think that's another point that's getting lost within the mix here, is that we are all here representing other individuals, including those who represent veterans. So we as students went out and had many discussions with student groups on campus. I know that when Liel asked me to meet with the Black Caucus, because I'm the chair and the speaker of the Black Caucus, we were happy to do that. And Liel made a compelling case because I had been a part of the CJC for the entirety of the year, right? I wasn't a part of it and left. I didn't join halfway through. I've been a part of the CJC through this entire process. I think the last thing that I really want to touch on is comments on Reddit and Facebook as being used as substantial evidence as to why we should take a second look at this. I know personally, in terms of the work I do on the student assembly, I have been mentioned in transphobic comments on Reddit, and Uche himself has been mentioned in racist rhetoric on Facebook in relations to what we do to the student assembly. So I'm not sure that's the best barometer as to how we should measure public opinion. The absolute last thing that I want to say is that students best represent students. And it is unequivocal that the students on this call, the undergraduates on this call, support the resolution at hand. And I think that's why you should as well.
Thank you for that. Charlie.
I just have a question about timeline, because I know it figures in a lot of people's thinking about the president's proposal. And if you remember back in September, there was a lot of debate about the interplay between the CJC and the UA. And I, for one, was sort of in favor of talking about breaking the code up into small parts, talking about things along the way. In other words, during the 7 or 8 UA meetings that would bring us up to today. And because now the absence of that, I can't process a 30 pager this quickly. And so I guess my question then is, maybe it's directed to CJC members. Can you tell me again why we didn't, over the course of the last 7 or 8 months, talk about the big issues? For example, like Joe mentioned, maybe 2 or 3 meetings ago, these 7 big issues. One is the standard of evidence. The other one is the alignment under the Dean of Students. Why couldn't we have had those discussions about those very substantive issues? Why couldn't we have discussions about them in October and November and January and so on? That's a big mystery to me. And that's why I'm not too sympathetic right now, and I'd like to be corrected. I'm not too sympathetic to the argument that, the president should have given us more time to work on things. How come they going to get the whole summer to to have public comment, whereas we were compressed into 1 or 2 weeks and so on. So can someone speak to how we talked about the code over this academic year?
Yeah, Bob, if you may allow me. Bob,
yes,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah, Charlie, I mean, I can't speak for what happened last semester. I was not the chair of the CJC. In fact, I think Logan would be better in order to talk about how she approached the code process and process of discussing the code at the UA. I mean, from my perspective and from what I've done throughout this whole entire semester, I've been trying to get into, I've presented multiple times. I've told you all about what it is. And I think we've had a couple of substantive discussions at the UA level about some high level stuff where we got some question and answer and stuff. And I'm not gonna comment on how I feel the fall semester went. I was a voting member, but I was not the chair, and therefore I want to give Logan the opportunity to be able to talk about how she approached it. Just because I know that, you know, it's awkward when you have a switchover, and, you know, I'm completely grateful for the work that Logan did. And so I want to allow her to give her mentality. But my mentality was, and I hope it kind of came through this semester, of exactly what you wanted. I mean, obviously pandemic and the break was a bit hard to manage. So I hope we try to smooth it out as much as possible. But I mean, I'll let Logan answer for what her leadership thought was for the fall.
Logan?
Yeah. So as you all know, over the fall, we got the first substantive portion of the code from the University Council later than expected. And the main argument that was going on through the CJC at that time was whether to remove the OJA's office from its own private island to be under administration. And that was a discussion that was brought under the code. I think the reason that we didn't have more substantive conversations with the UA is because I was waiting for the procedural draft, because you kind of can't look at the violations without the process in which people are going to fall under the code. So I was waiting for that because they go hand in hand. And in many ways, the procedural section, I don't want to say is more important, but it's more telling of how the judicial process will work. So I was not chair for the time in which the procedural draft was adequately worked through the CJC. So I can't say anything about that. But the reason that we only heard about the OJA and the other pressing issues that Martha Pollack asked of us is because all I had at that point was really the definitions and our free speech statement, which actually has never been publicly commented on or posted. And I don't know why, but that's my reasoning. We had talks on the things that I was able to at the time, but I resigned as chair because I couldn't do 15 to 20 hours a week again, two semesters in a row. And I hope you can all respect and understand that. I feel like there was a little bit of a dig at me for only being on the committee for half of a semester, but I tried my best. And I think you all know that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I really just kind of wanted to, you know, previous comments from Adam, Richard, and Logan. I think overall, first and foremost, is that Martha, she has jurisdiction. She can accept or deny the versions of the code that we give to her. She has that power. It's within her right. And there's not much that we can do about it as an assembly. It's written in our charter. And, you know, I get that a lot of people are unhappy with, you know, her comments, but, you know, it is what it is, to be completely honest with you. She has that power and that jurisdiction to, you know, turn down whatever draft of the code that, turn down any draft of the code that we give to her. And for being completely honest, the UA for the past 32 months had an opportunity to be able to revise this code, and it did not happen. It failed. And I'm getting a little bit confused, because it seems to me that, you know, some people are a little bit bothered or unsettled by the fact that the OSA was able to come up with a code that has student support or widespread student support. And I'm just not understanding, you know, why in the past, you know, before this semester, why haven't there been, why weren't there any kind of, you know, outreach to different communities, like deep outreach, instead of just putting up a website, you know, that with an obscure link that people can't really follow? Like, why wasn't there any actual community outreach to some of these marginalized communities, to some of these organizations, and actually trying to get their thoughts and opinions on this, actually trying to move this code along? I think at the end of the day, it's like I'm not really sure of, you know, what else. I don't think that we're bowing down to administration or just giving them a blank check. I think the fact of the matter is that, you know, we failed as an assembly, and, you know, now it's time to make a decision and get things going. So,
Chris.
Hey, everybody. If I talk more than 5 minutes, mute me. So in a weird way, I'm on everybody's side about this. You know, I'm an employee. I work in IT. I've been on the employee and university assembly the last 2 years. I've been a chair of a committee. I've been a member of a bunch of committees. I've worked on high-level things and very specific things. So this resolution 8 has my support for reasons that are, one, we know that the code is not working for anybody right now, and that I think overall, all the students that are listening to this should know that the university really wants you to be here. We want you to be on campus. The faculty love you, the staff love you. Like, you guys are what makes the university great. So if they didn't have to do this at all, like have this code and all this judicial stuff, like everybody would really be happy. But there are mistakes that people make, and you kind of run into some weird stuff, and you need to learn a lesson and have some help learning that lesson, I guess. What I think is sort of happening, right, is that the CJC, you know, it's been 3 years that they've been trying to work this through. And there's like a lot of turnover, you know, every year is sort of a new group of people. And this year was the year that it worked the best for everybody. And President Pollack reading our CJC's proposed code and rejecting it before we sort of actually were able to submit it kind of like takes the wind out of the sails. Like, I feel really bad for the CJC members. It reminds me, like in the employee assembly, we had an election that we didn't, you know, we got people in places. And then what we realized was that there was some conflicts because there was multiple people for the same seat, only to sort of figure out that we never actually did the election. We kind of just had people show up and did things. And that's a little bit like what this is like at this point in time. I think the OSA thing is really, really good. Like, the more voices that we can get, the more information we can have from the students, especially who this affects the most, and now that this is going to be a student code of conduct, is supremely awesome. I really wish there would have been a little bit more collaboration between them and the CJC. And in the previous meeting, it kind of was like, it was asked, like, well, why didn't you guys really do that? And I was like, well, the answer was, and not really trying to hold anybody to specific words, but it was like, we're kind of our own organization. We don't really have to work with other people in that way. And which was like sort of like surprising to me, because they worked really hard to get all this good feedback from everybody else. But this one specific kind of group that is underneath the university assembly rules and designated by the board of trustees to like go do this, they didn't like send that feedback along. And that's like me in IT building up a whole really good system of servers for people to use. And then this other group sort of showing up and saying, well, we did it too, but we think we did it better. So like now you kind of have to choose. But besides those things, I think ultimately, as Yuche had said, our job in shared governance is to provide recommendations. Like, whatever, if we pass the CJC's version, it was going to go to the president, and she was going to say, I love it, I hate it, I'm sending it on to the Board of Trustees Governance Committee, and they were going to look at it and say, these are some good ideas, but we have other things that we want to do, so here we go. So we're really making suggestions. And I read through all the public comments, and I am not a person of the code. I read what Robert Platt submitted. I tried to read through everything, because even when I talked to my CIC members, we took our last meeting to talk just mostly about the code. We were like, this is an important decision. This feels really important. This is gonna affect everybody. But I keep coming back, and the reason I support the resolution 8 is we wanted more time. We know the evidence standard, it was a thing that we were trying to figure out. We know that the Department of Education threw out these new rules, and I feel like that puts other pressure on us, even though they're really more specific to Title IX and sexual harassment. And I will say that the president seemed to be possibly a little confused about what rules apply to where, but I think we all are. So
what I think I'm voting for here and why I would vote for this resolution is for the progress of we're going to take the best of both of the worlds, all of our total input, and entrust it to people who really want us to be here. Who owns the code? I think that, like, you know, we all own the code. As soon as they make whatever they're going to do in the fall, there's nothing that stops all of us in the assemblies to rewrite resolutions and amendments. I know that sort of sounds like we haven't even done it, so why is Chris talking about doing something again? But we have the power to use our voice through the shared governance process. And so without really stating a question, I totally sympathize and understand Adam, Hal, and Richard and Logan's point of view that, like, we never really got the CJC's version on the table or voted to submit to the president. And she kind of just took that and it all got done through the presses. And I feel like that's an unfortunate misstep. But in the progress of here's the end of the year, we've been trying to do this for 3 years. We've suddenly got the best of all worlds. That's why I support this resolution number 8.
Heeler.
So unfortunately, as a co-host, I can't electronically have my hand raised for some reason. So I was just making notes. Yeah, just making notes. Thanks, Chris. I want to thank Chris for the comments that he has made. I think I'm going to echo them. I also want to address the fact that the agenda was late, again, due to the fact that we did have the comments and the emails from President Pollack all pretty much run through, you know, this Monday all at last minute and was shared with the UA as a whole as soon as we all had it. Zoom hasn't helped, and the pandemic hasn't helped us as well. We had delays on getting the minutes to me, unfortunately, from all of us from the OA. I think actually I didn't even get the last minutes until about an hour or so before this meeting. So was there any reason as far as wanting to delay things or wanting to stop it? The Resolution 8 as well, which was the reason why we also were a bit slow, is because the executive cabinet also had a lot of dialogue. We had very different input. We're not all, in a sense, doing a celebration that, yes, you know, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly how we wanted to end the year. In no way whatsoever. We can attest to it, you know, Jeff. We had a lot of discussions even up through to this morning. But the realities are we are at the end of the line. We have no more time. And the president is being extremely clear. The OSA and the student assemblies have given us other options. They've given us input that, again, yes, you are correct, Logan and, you know, Chris, it would be fantastic, would have been fantastic if the OSA had worked together with the CJC. Being a minority staff member, which you don't get that many Latinos staff, I do think that sometimes we are better heard when we're at the table and when we are able to give that, you know, opinion directly. So it is a bit sad that we didn't have that situation, but we find ourselves that it didn't occur. As I say, the Resolution 8 is not perfect, nor is it exactly how I would have wanted at the end of the year to go, but we have no more time. President Pollack has been clear. Resolution 8 is an attempt to have a bit more of a discussion of open forum and allow the rest of the campus to give us input throughout the summer. It is to push through and try to recommend that both the CJC and the OSA's documents are looked at equally and in balance and in fairness and move this along. We have no more time, and in no way is it belittling anyone's work, anyone's time and effort. It's just to get this done.
Thank you for that, Pilar. We have 25 minutes left, and I'm going to call again on UA members first to the extent we can. Deborah, you had your hand up, then disappeared. Are you, or at least from my view, it did. Are you interested in speaking?
Not yet. I'm still formulating my thoughts.
Okay, so I'll make sure. And Cody, same thing.
I did have a quick question. Has there something that's not clear to me is if anyone has any sense of the president's office's response to this idea that, you know, she's incorrect that having these two different standards is not something that's allowed. I mean, we've raised these points internally, and by email, but has this been raised to her office, and has there been any response?
Yes, I've talked to her directly about that when she and I chatted before she sent me the email that I forwarded to you. Just for context, that all happened pretty quickly. She and I chatted, and she finished an email and sent it to me within 2 hours, and I sent it on to you within half an hour. So it's all a few hours. She is quite convinced that her view is correct. It's based on University Council's opinion. University Council's appointed by the trustees, and she's convinced that that's what the trustees are going to believe too. So she doesn't really think that's a debatable point. And I don't think we're going to get anywhere pushing it beyond that. I've mentioned that there were voices on the campus who thought otherwise, and she said the University Council is the voice that the trustees will listen to. Joseph.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So first, I want to acknowledge that I hope, you know, acknowledge that it was my intent to dig at Logan. You know, if that was the impact, I'm completely sorry. It's not a dig. I mean, it's a really hard process to chair the CJC, especially when you're dealing with a numerous stakeholders. So I'm sorry if that's how it came off. This committee is the most challenging committee to chair in shared governance, and anyone who even puts their name in the ring, I have the greatest respect for. And that's coming after someone who's chaired the student assembly. And the student assembly is a raucous group. So I'm very conflicted with how I feel about this. And because I, you know, to be, and so I'm not going to, I'm probably going to end up abstaining just because I feel like I'm conflicted as chair of CJC and as a president, just to be transparent. Because I feel like that makes the most sense. But I just want to give a whole entire, you know, a thing about my what this process is. Shared governance is messy. Governance in general is messy. It's confusing. It's hard to bring every stakeholder to every stake, to every table, to always be viewing it in that lens. It's a really difficult job to do for anyone. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to be thrown curveballs, and curveballs exist in this world in different ways, whether it be in or out in the governance process. And it's our ability to adapt to these curveballs and say what makes the most sense. And I think everyone coming into this conversation has the same ethos of how can I make this campus better, and how can I make this code better, and how can I make the experience for so many people on this campus better. And sometimes that forces us to feel very conflicted, to get angry, to get hurt, to get mad. And I can say in my semester of chairing the CJC, were there things we could have done better? Yes, we could have not had a global pandemic. Oh my God, I wish. Like, were there things we could have done? Yes, there are always things we could have done. And we can analyze that, and we can think about that stuff, or we can just sit with it right now and talk about what it is right now. And right now we have this resolution to do this, to, you know, give University Council the ability to compare, to do all this stuff. And I've been thinking, and I've talked with some people about this process, and one of the key themes we've had in the revision of the code is to make this process more educational. And I keep thinking about this moment to myself, and I keep thinking, this is such an educational moment for all of shared governance. This is such an educational moment to recognize where mistakes might have been made, where new ideas might have been put out that challenged us. And I can say that I hope people see this as, sure, a really tough moment, but a moment that is almost the beauty of this. So I'm very conflicted with how I feel. I mean, of course, does it suck to work every Friday morning from 9 to 10:30 a.m. to have President Pollack say she doesn't like what you do? Of course. Plus a Saturday meeting that was like 3 hours long. Of course, that sucks. But sometimes we have to just take it as it comes and adapt. And I mean, I will let the UA do what the UA needs to talk about. I hope people get the ability to express all their opinions. I'm deeply grateful for every member of the CJC. I'm deeply conflicted with how I feel. You know, I've been thinking about this since I got the email on Friday, to be completely honest, every morning. So, no, but I don't really have anything, but I just want to acknowledge that shared governance is messy, and sometimes It's our ability to persevere through the messiness that makes us a better body of shared governance. And I hope people see that more so than anything else through this process.
Andy.
Thanks, Bob. I'm a little reluctant on the resolution because I agree with what Logan and what Adam are saying, that we would be in one way giving up our say in as shared governance as a members of the UA. So I'm wondering if we can add, it's not a formal amendment yet. I'm wondering if we can add a therefore clause that states that before the final campus code of conduct is set to the board of trustees, if it could come back to the UA so we can have a final say, approve it before the trustees can approve it. I'm wondering on the feasibility of this, again, it's not a formal amendment.
I think it could be offered as an amendment once we address Richard's amendment, which takes precedence, if I have that correctly.
Okay, thank you.
And we have about 15, 20 minutes to finish this off. Deborah.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the code as like a living document rather than something that is final or finite.
Oh my God.
I understand that this is like a tough situation. There's a lot that's happened and like the process and procedures has kind of been upended in many different capacities, but it's important to recognize that this document is not a document that's final and going to forever stay the same. It's going to continue to change as our campus continues to change, as our society and our community continue to change. And as it currently stands, Resolution 8 offers something that our current status quo doesn't offer. And it's an opportunity for students who are interacting and people who are interacting with the code's process to have an educational aspect rather than a punitive aspect, which is, I think, the most important and beneficial part of this document. So I think it's important to consider, well, besides how the code came to be and how the procedures came to be, what the code that we're looking at is actually doing right now. And from my perspective, in my opinion, it's supporting students in many different capacities. I think shifting our conversation towards that arena rather than talking about what has happened is really going to be important moving forward.
Thank you for that. Jeff.
Hey, everyone. I don't usually talk too much in the meetings because I really like to listen to everybody's opinion. And I think we've had a really substantive discussion. And for me, as someone who's been watching the process through the semester, both this one and last, I think that both sides make a lot of salient points. I have my own personal reservations for the resolution, mostly because of the inability of accountability from the president and how that process will go. But I also agree at the same time, there's this in necessary need to extend public comment. I really second Andy's idea of providing some kind of input coming back to the UA. I know that that might not lead to anything again because I'll go back to the president to approve or reject. But I think that the vote to date as a whole doesn't mean much in some capacity, right? We're an advisory board. We're not authoritative on the code. But I think it does speak to, as through our vote, a message about how governance is working in relationship with other powers of body on campus. And I think that we should be considerate of that as well. And so those are kind of my general thoughts. I think that Uche, Gavin, a lot of undergraduate students have brought really salient points about what's it like to represent groups on campus and how that process looks like communicating with them. And I also recognize the CJC and the work that they've done is tremendous throughout the semesters. So I think I'm excited to keep hearing more about the discussion.
Okay, thank you. Logan, you have your hand up. I'm not sure if that's intended or not.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's mainly gonna mirror quite a bit of what Jeff said and just my concerns about accountability and also it'll echo Adam quite a bit in saying my concerns about the CJC not being adequately heard. And to really bring in that I just wish that the OSA draft was brought to the UA earlier, but more than that, that it was brought to the CJC first because the SA is represented on the CJC. I also want to just say that the past two meetings, there have been comments about how certain people shouldn't speak on behalf of others based on, I believe, it just being race. And unless there's an attack, I feel like that's quite inappropriate, because I consider myself a diverse person. And just because you can't see that from the outside doesn't mean that I don't have my own diversity. And it's kind of insulting. But Bob, I would like to ask that we recognize the JCC Gabrielle Cantor. I know that we've been doing a preference to UA members. I'd also love to hear Barbara's opinion as well, if she wants to share it. But Gabby has had her hand up for quite a long time. So
she has, with 15 minutes left to go and several members also wishing to speak, I'm going to decline that request. I'm hoping we can vote on Richard's amendment soon and move this towards closure, but Gavin.
Yeah, hi, just to respond quickly to your point, Logan. Sorry, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, great. All I wanted to bring up, and I think it's still important, is that the Willard Street Hall takeover, which happened in 1969, was on the behalf of Black energies, Black labor, and also Black lives were on the line. And also a result from that, yes, was the student assembly and shared governance. But we must remember that when invoking an event in which Black labors and Black energies were the primary syndicate, it is, we must show deference to those who are Black. And I won't get into this race thing with you because, and we can do that offline, but I think it's actually very demeaning and wrong to say anything otherwise. But, of course, to each their own.
Deborah.
Yeah, I just wanted to also add quickly to that comment. I think it's important to recognize that when you're in any position of power or privilege, it's important not to use your platform to take space up from my marginalized voices who live and experience some of the things that you're talking about. So I think just as like a general comment, not directed towards anyone in particular, that like when invoking the idea of talking about marginalized communities in any capacity, that to recognize that you're, that people, that anyone is coming from a perspective of privilege and power, and that could change the way your message comes across.
Uche.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And I just have to continue echoing, you know, Gavin and Debbie's point. It's not about, like you were saying, Logan, it's not about whether you feel if you're a diverse person or whatnot. It's about the fact that when I walk out into the world, I'm seen as a Black man first. And that is the same for other Black students, for other students of color, for other marginalized communities on campus. So the point of saying that is the fact that throughout this entire process, people of color, marginalized communities have not been involved in this conversation as they should have been. So yes, although yes, you may think that you're advocating and, you know, putting, you know, trying to help out the interests of marginalized communities and communities of color, that message does not come any better from you. It comes from the people of color, from those marginalized communities, from those people who live those experiences every single day. So, yeah.
Bob, can I quickly just comment on that?
3 seconds, if you could, please.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm not trying to discredit anyone and their personal experiences. And honestly, if I was chair this semester of the CJC, that's when the public comment would have gone out and it would have gone to all the constituent groups. So I don't know why this is coming to a place where I'm being seen as privileged. I'm honestly just trying to represent every possible voice that speaks to me that I can. And I'm sorry that any of you are offended by what I'm saying, but it's really not intentional.
Okay, thank you for that. We have 10 minutes left. I am going to do my best to move this towards completion. Richard, your amendment is on the floor. Should we take a vote on it?
The way to do that is to call the question, get a second. My guess is that we're ready.
Could we restate Richard's amendment, please?
Thank you.
I'll restate it. If the the amendment is in the form of a substitute, it will take resolution, it basically will substitute for all of resolution 8. And it will substitute the CJC draft as it was submitted to us. And that's really it. If you vote yes, you are voting for the CJC draft. If you vote no, you're voting not to accept it as a substitute for Resolution 8. When we're done with that, if the CJC draft comes up, then we'd vote that up or down. If Resolution 8 is preferred, then we would vote that up or down. That's the parliamentary situation that we're in.
I think that's clear. Is that clear to everyone?
Thank you, Richard. Yes.
Can we, would someone like to call the vote, please?
I'll call the vote just to make it easy.
Okay. Logan, second?
Second.
Okay. So again, if you vote yes, it is in favor of substituting the CJC draft for Resolution 8. Is that correct, Richard?
That's right.
Okay. All those in favor of the resolution vote yes. Those who are opposed vote no.
Ten no's, five yes.
The amendment fails.
11 no's.
Can I request, Pilar, that you state names, since these are important votes, and so that we have consistency and accountability in who's voting for the record?
Point of order, you would have to motion to roll call vote on each amendment in order for that to be possible.
I believe that I'm allowed to ask to read off votes for the record.
That, am I muted? Why am
no,
I muted?
You're not.
Anyway, they, Joe is right. You know, we could make a technical request for a roll call. But my suggestion would be that to read it into the record, we just have Pilar read off the names. Then it won't take any time. And that it is important to have a record on this issue.
So I unfortunately can't see the names. To me, they come up as anonymous. Perhaps I'm going to ask if the, oh, well there, okay, I can see. Whoa, hold on. Let me try to get my screen sorted.
Can our clerk record those for the minutes? Would that be adequate for people? Is that okay?
If they include names, then yes, please.
Yes, with names. Can our clerk do that? Is that possible? And Gina?
If not, I can read them. I can see them. It was 11 no's and five yeses. I'm seeing 10 no's and five yeses. Can we make sure everyone has their, okay, yep, 10 to six now. So 10 no's, six yeses. And Gina, can you confirm you guys will take note of the names?
Yes.
Thank you.
One abstention.
Okay. One abstention? One abstention.
We will have those in the record, but move on and not read them now in the interest of time, if that's acceptable to people.
If you could just leave them up for a moment while we make sure we get them for the record.
I'm not sure who has control over that, but it's not me.
Jeff, did you say something about an abstention? Do you?
I don't know that I actually called for abstentions, but
are there none?
If you wanted to abstain, please raise your hand. I never actually called for it.
Bob, can you let people know to clear their hands? There's some previous hands from the Q&A session before.
Yes. So, yes.
Yep.
Thank you for that. Okay. We're ready to move on. That takes us back to Resolution 8. And Adam, I believe, did not propose an amendment, but had a suggestion which he thought might lead to one, which I thought others. Is it Adam or it's Andy?
Andy.
Correct.
Andy.
Andy, I'm sorry. It's been a long afternoon here.
Sure. Do I have the floor?
Andy, would you like to speak to that? You do.
Sure. Okay. So I would like to add further resolved clause, preferably after line 31, which would state that prior to submitting the final version of the campus code of conduct to present it to the assembly to have their approval or something along those lines.
Is there a second for that?
I second.
Discussion. I see no hands. Should we call a vote for that?
I call a question on the amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. So,
Andy,
is everyone clear on what the amendment is?
Andy, I think you're voting against your own amendment.
Oh, sorry.
Not yet, you're not. I haven't called the actual vote. Everyone clear on what we're voting on before you vote? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, yes. Opposed, no. If you want to abstain, raise your hand. And again,
16 Gina, yeses.
Okay, so the amendment passes. Gina and our clerk, can you track who voted?
18 yeses.
Okay, if you call for the no votes, that'll help us out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah. If you want to vote no, please vote no. I thought I had. It's a long day before this meeting started. I actually teach for a living. Okay.
And also just to reiterate, sorry, Bob, obviously if you're a voting member, you are allowed to vote. If you are not a voting member, please do not vote or raise your hand at this time.
Thank you. Are there other discussion or amendments? We have just a few moments. Logan, are you trying to... Are you abstaining or trying to speak?
No, I'm trying to speak while also keep my vote up. So my vote's back up and now if it's okay, I have the floor.
Correct? Yes, okay.
Okay, thank you. I would also like us to consider another amendment in which the University Council would not be the only body which would be working on this. So whether that's an ad hoc committee, which includes various members of the legal faculty, whether from the law school or across the board, so that the university council is balanced out with lawyers and members from each constituent group. I just think that that would be more in the nature of shared governance when it comes to this. So I would like to make a motion for that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion.
I have a quick question. Could you just elaborate more? I guess this is more towards Logan. Could you elaborate more on how you feel like adding in, because university councils, they're lawyers that represent Cornell, like they have the best interests of Cornell in their mind. So I'm just trying to get a better understanding of why you feel like, you know, adding in or trying to bring in more, you know, parties of people when we already have, you know, a university council that's there to do that job, to do that.
Uche, before we get to the discussion, we're getting close to the clock. I want to submit a motion to extend the meeting by 5 to 10 minutes.
Second.
Yep. All those in favor of extending for 10 minutes, vote yes. Noes, vote no. Abstained, I assume that passes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Uche. Were you done?
Yeah.
He asked me a question, if it's okay for me to answer, Bob.
Yes, it'll be fine. I just want to make sure he was finished.
Yeah, so my main reason is because the student assembly draft and the university council draft are almost identical, minus quite a few, like I think maybe one or two paragraphs and some points. So I just think for accountability purposes, whether it would be members from the university assembly or members from the legal faculty, preferably the legal faculty, since the U Council is legal as well. This is the only way that I personally feel comfortable voting through this motion, because it calls for accountability, and I don't think that we'll end up with a draft to approve at the end that is something that we're not expecting and run into any sort of problems. I think it's just a way to ensure due process. And the University Council is going to be considering their own work, essentially, because the OSA's draft is very close to it. So I would just like to see the CJC's draft get weighed equally. And I want to ensure that that happens. And I think ensuring that happens is either by having an ad hoc committee with lawyers or members of not even the UA, because I think at this point we might be a conflict of interest, but the other constituent bodies. And I think that that would be the most fair process to stay within the realm of shared governance.
Richard.
Yeah, I just wanted to support Logan on this. She's made the argument that I would. I would note one thing, and that is in the past, the law faculty have in fact been involved in the CJC revisions. And it is really important here. I've said this before, and I've written I'm not going to repeat myself, but it's really important to note that when we're looking at this, the University Council has a particular interest institutionally. They're not neutral. And we would have heard if we could have, some of the comments from Gabriel Cantor and Risa Lerowitz would have described some of that, those institutional biases. So it is important, I think, that we consult, as we've talked widely here, consult other parts of the institution, particularly those parts that have expertise in these issues. I actually don't think the University Council is particularly versed in Title IX issues. If you go to the law faculty, you will find that that's the case. So those kinds of issues and advice, I deeply suspect, in fact, I'm more than suspicious, that the president was ill-advised by the University Council on the Title IX issue. And I think it's very important that we get other consultation. This is something, and I've said this before, that really arms the central administration. To me, it's very sensitive because it comes directly down to freedom of speech and dissent.
Deborah.
I just wanted to ask a question as to how the members of said ad hoc committee would be chosen, what type of undergraduate representation would be on this committee, because I think it's important before I vote on any type of amendment to make sure it's codified that undergraduate students in particular would be represented in a larger capacity than they have been throughout this process.
Logan?
So I can just say what I had in mind. I wanted to leave it up for discussion for the university assembly because I don't want to speak for us all, but what I figured was however many members of the university council there were, that there would be an equal number of legal faculty, and then we would send somewhere between one and two members from each of the four constituent bodies, and probably no one from the UA, because I think it would be a conflict of interest for that anyone on the UA at this point to serve on it. So I would try to have, if there's two lawyers on the U Council and two lawyers from the faculty, that there would also be two members maybe from each group. I also think including the JCC and the JA would be a positive thing, but once again, this is just, I think an ad hoc committee would be good for accountability for everyone and to ensure that like both documents are being considered and public comment is really being read. And I'm obviously open to suggestions. This is just an idea that if we can reach a consensus on this, I'm happy to vote the resolution through.
Joe.
So I don't support this resolution, mainly because because legal faculty in the past when participating in the CJC have called undergraduate students absolutely naive, have questioned the authority of how undergraduate students speak on the undergraduate experience, have belittled them throughout the process. And that has been, that was something that happened. And I don't support legal faculty. I could support, you know, having an ad hoc committee in which students are the student voice. This whole issue came from about the fact that students said that they weren't being heard. And again, we institute another system in which we disadvantage those students again. I think Andy's amendment is sufficient. I think it does produce accountability because it allows us to see the final product. I do not believe that we solve all issues when students say the issues are that you are not listening to us by adding, you know, faculty who in the past have said things that are demeaning to undergraduate students. I believe that if we truly listen to students, we will get the outcome. But this amendment doesn't do that. This amendment, in fact, biases the ability for this system to be more legally ingrained, in my opinion. If there's another way to ensure accountability, I'm all for it. But I think it needs to be student-centered. I think we need to devise those solutions that are more student-centered, that allow students to have an equal participation in the process, not one in which we say the university counsels our lawyers, therefore we'll add more lawyers. I think we just continue to compound the issue. I think we need to center the students in a solution, not add more law degrees.
We're 6 minutes into our 10-minute extension, so I'm going to limit people to 1 minute each moving forward. Logan.
Yeah, so I just want to echo Richard that in the past, we have called on the legal faculty, especially the dean of the law school, and I would assume that this would be up to discretion of the dean himself, and he would not put members on who would discredit students. I also want to point out that my meeting with the university council ended up with manipulation and being told that it's their code, and I do not feel comfortable just leaving it in their hands. And after Deborah's question, I fully support having students and faculty and staff serving on this. I just also think that since it's a legalistic document at the end of the day and it's going to be enforceable, if we have the U Council, we also need other attorneys.
I'd like to see the amendment called if we could, in the interest of finishing this off, you know, extension. Is there a motion to call the vote?
Motion.
Second.
I second.
All those in favor of the amendment, vote yes. Those opposed, say no. And abstentions, please raise your hand. If you're not a member of the UA, please do not do any of the above.
Everyone has a chance to vote. We see 10 no's, 8 yeses. Again, if you're not a voting member of the UA, please do not vote, as it makes it difficult for the Office of Assembly to go through our voting list.
I abstained.
Sorry, Chris, did you abstain? Thank you.
We have the vote down, do we?
Yes.
We're 9 minutes into our 10-minute extension. May I suggest that we call a vote on Resolution 8 as amended? I didn't see a motion for that.
Wait, I'm sorry. Did did my amendment fail? I just want to get clarification for
it
the record.
It failed.
Okay,
yes.
It failed. Yeah, it was close, but it failed. 10 against 8 in favor, I believe, is what Pilar said.
Like
and we will record the
names. I'd like to call the question.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, Caroline. To a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, the motion is, we will vote on the core Resolution 8 as amended with a single amendment. All those in favor of Resolution 8 as amended, vote yes. Those opposed, no. And raise your hand if you wish to abstain. And again, if you're not a member of the UA, please do not do any of the above.
Fourteen yeses, two noes. Any abstentions? Please raise your hand. Adam, is that an abstention?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Then another. Do you see another abstention?
We're recording the vote, are we?
Yes. 14 yeses, three noes. Adam abstaining, and I believe Jin Tech Hung abstaining as well. If that is a valid raised hand for abstention.
And I also ask that we record these with names as well for the minutes.
Yes, Gina and
thank you.
Can we get those?
Yep, thank you.
Okay, that is the end of our business, and we're past the 10-minute extension at that. It is our final meeting in the academic year. We may call an additional meeting if there's some urgent business, but there's no plan to do so at the moment. I want to thank you all. I think this was, for the most part, a very reasoned discussion. I know there's a lot of energy on all sides, but I think it was well done. I appreciate that. Particularly want to thank the officers of the UA for their service this year, and our committee chairs. I won't go through names in the interest of running over time, but I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
You're
second.
Okay. Second. We are adjourned. Thank you very much all for your service.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.